The question and theme we want to focus on today is what makes language, what makes words turn on us? Instead of helping to clarify the world, they actually confuse the world. Instead of enlightening us, they actually obscure what we are looking at and experiencing. Well, that's just the kind of question we like to work with here on Poetry, Passion, and Pleasure Podcast with your host, Dale Byron. That's me. And I am so glad that you're here today to join us and me in this new episode. So, and of course, I should say that this is the place where we work with poetry, not only for its beauty and its aesthetics and its sounds, but we also work with it for its practical, down-to-earth ways in which it can help us, you know, just in so many different ways to navigate the world and to understand the world a little more fully. So, you know, this question, I've thought about this for a long time, and a quote from a great poet, Jack Gilbert, who we lost just a few years ago, who lived in the Bay Area for many years, he said, how astonishing it is that language can almost mean, and frightening that it does not quite. How astonishing it is that language can almost mean, and frightening that it does not quite. That was Jack Gilbert. So, but what I want to focus on today, I want to focus on words again that get in our way, really. Words and language and metaphors in particular that get in our way, that get in our way, that lead us astray in terms of really grokking and understanding the world. One of the quotes that I brought today was by George Lakoff, who's a linguist from the Bay Area as well, lives in Berkeley and teaches at Cal, or he taught at Cal for many years. He said, "Beware of metaphors, beware of metaphors, for they shape our thoughts and our actions." And while I'm on a roll here, I'll give a couple more. Joseph Campbell says, "Metaphors are the powerful weapons in the war of ideas." Metaphors are the powerful weapons in the war of ideas. That's what Joseph Campbell said. Metaphors, the third one, metaphors are like fire, capable of both illuminating and destroying. And that's Terry Pratchett who said that. So the poem that I want to focus on today is called Words That Turn on Us. And I think it kind of gets to the heart of what we're saying. And we're going to talk about metaphors and words that, again, that lead us astray. So here's the poem, Words That Turn on Us. The words say, attach yourself securely to this idea. Words say, it's you through and through, so believe it real. Let me just stop right there for just a second. You know, one of the things that I have really been enjoying over the last and sinking into in my life over the last almost 6 months, actually, is a daily mindful practice. And the essential understanding, and you know, there are nuances at this, but the essential understanding is for us not to get attached to the thoughts that are constantly flowing through our minds, the ideas, the monkey mind that's flowing through. And so these first two lines, the words say, attach yourself securely to this idea. Words say, it's you through and through, so believe it real. And one of the things we find, and that I want to bring to us and bring to the discussion today, is that the moment that we attach ourselves, that we identify with a particular metaphor or an idea or a thought, we are off to the races. we forget that that is not us. That is not who we are. And once we begin to get a little bit of altitude on this, as mindfulness really helps us and continually reminds us, once we get the altitude on the idea or the thought or the metaphor, we realize that we do not have to attach to it. And we don't have to go running down the road, as we're going to see, with all the implications of having a particular belief that we are attached to, that we consider to be absolutely true, or isness, as I like to say. So the words say, attach yourself securely to this idea. Words say, it's you through and through, so believe it real. Words shout, cause and effect, until your ears ache. Words hiss, dead end. They hiss dead end, then dare you to disagree. They shove you into a small and mean enclosure, a barbed wire fence of belief and snarling teeth. And they do that. They do that. We're going to explore some of the ones which I think are the worst, but they do that. They, once we get attached, once we have no distance between ourselves and these beliefs, and we don't even realize that they are at the deeper assumption within us, or they are a deeper assumption that we're making, then we are off to the races. We are off to the races. You know, the philosopher Nietzsche said, every word is a prejudice. Every word is a prejudice. So if every word is a prejudice, my goodness, a metaphor is a whole trainload full of them that just, you know, come chugging through our lives. Second stanza. It's a merciless landscape where you must now keep your head down and never gaze upriver from this faraway flute end of trouble. Words, metaphors, leading us into the danger, the storms, the destruction. It says, at the end of the day, as though whatever was said next was obviously true. Let's talk about that just a little bit, that stanza. It's a merciless landscape where you must now keep your head down and never gaze upriver. Now, what we're talking about there is the idea that if we're able to get a little altitude on our thinking, on our ideas, particularly on the metaphors that we use or that others provide us, let's say, and the power of that, that if we're not able to get a little altitude on those, then we never look upstream. And what I mean by looking upstream, another metaphor, is to see what is really at cause. What is really at cause with whatever we're dealing with? And sometimes once we have a deep assumption about a particular metaphor being true, being correct, then we stop looking upriver. We don't even question it anymore. So it's a merciless landscape where you must now keep your head down and never gaze upriver from this faraway flute end of trouble. And the trouble often is, by the way, the trouble, to drop out of the poem for a second again, the trouble is often far away from the cause. It's often far away from the cause, and yet that can get obscured, and we will never get to the bottom of it if we don't understand that. So it goes on to say, words, metaphors, leading us into the danger, the storms, the destruction. It says, at the end of the day, you ever heard somebody say that? They go, well, at the end of the day, and what they're really trying to say is, you know, don't question what I'm getting ready to say, because this is absolutely true. At the end of the day, and you know, what I want us to do when we hear somebody use that kind of language, immediately say, well, I don't know if that's really true, if that summarizes this whole aspect of what we're talking about. But anyway, I say, it says at the end of the day, as though whatever was said next was obviously true. And it isn't. And it isn't. I'm into the last stanza now. And it isn't. So then comes the essential display of light, yet again missed. The stars blotted it out by some rigid certainty, forcing us to think only in the proper linear ways, continuous strings of hissing words now yielding their awfully mean harvest. So damn the approved answers. So damn the approved answers, the preordained yeses and nos. So damn the rattlesnake words, those that would strike us dumb. You know, I think for me, some of the most harmful metaphors, and I've talked about some of these on this podcast before, but some of the most harmful metaphors that I think wash right over us, that I'd like to encourage us not to let these that I'm going to mention now wash over us, but to question them, to become aware of them. Sometimes a metaphor might just be fine. And once we become aware of it, we go, yeah, that's valid. That really strikes me. That helps me understand the world more. But sometimes we say no. We say, no. I am not going to accept your yeses and nos, your metaphors, your ideas. I'm not going to do that. Now, for me, some of the most harmful metaphors, one in particular that is the term natural resources. Because when we say natural resources, what we are saying is that the redwood trees, the mountains, the rock, the oceans, the fish, they're all natural resources that are to be, extracted and used, and they have no value except as natural resources. You know, that once we begin to use that metaphor and to take that on, a whole trainload full of assumptions follows into our psyche, into our mind and soul. How about this one? Courage as fight and battle. Courage, the word cor means heart. Courage is to know your heart. Oftentimes we act as though the only way to show courage is to fight, is to be in a battle. Now, I'm not saying, of course that occurs sometimes, but courage is not simply about fighting. How about nature as other? Nature as other. We talk about the environment as though it were other. Or one of the things we'll say is that when I die, I'm going to leave this world. What world are we going to leave? Where are we going? When we die, we are going back to this world that we never left. I've said this before. We don't live on the earth. We live in the earth. We are one more animal that exists on this earth. So nature, no, is not separate. It's not other. And the environment makes it sound like it's other. We need to save the environment. No. We are the environment. We are the environment. How about this one? How about the idea that wisdom can somehow exist without constraint or the idea of understanding how much is enough? How much is enough? Now, there's different metaphors for that, like continual growth and these metaphors, these economic metaphors. But what they all get down to is down to the idea that, we can take it all. We can extract it all. That we don't need any constraints. And I believe, and said this on a recent podcast, but I'll repeat it because it's a dangerous metaphor to think that there can be wisdom without restraint, that there can be wisdom without understanding how much is enough. Of course, you know, the idea that we can have infinite growth on a finite planet, you know, or the metaphor of externalities, you know, that's a buzzword that's used in the economic world for those things we don't count. Right. So we can burn fossils. We can do whatever we do. We don't have to worry about the air or the water or the fresh water or the ocean water. We can put plastics in the ocean. It is slated that there will be more plastic by weight in the oceans by 2070 than there will be fish. That may be 2050, actually. And that the idea that we are, the idea that we are things, you know, the idea that unless it's made of some kind of material, a thing, we even say this, how about we use this language? We say, does it matter? Does it matter? How about that? Does it matter? Well, if it's not a thing, if it's not made of matter, it doesn't matter. And yet, if we dig into the leading edge in physics, we know that the idea that the world is much more an energy, a sound, a wave, a wavicle. It's neither a particle or a wave. And so we know that the metaphor of saying about things, you know, that is not really the way the world works. The world is energy. So those are just some of the what I consider to be the most harmful metaphors. And that's when language begins to obscure, not enlighten. That's when language confuses us, you know, because if we reject these metaphors, if we understand, this was another quote about metaphors can imprison us within the confines of limited thinking or set us free to explore new horizons. Remember what Nietzsche said, every word is a prejudice. And what I sometimes like to say is that language is the only tool for us humans. Language is the only tool that we can't put down. Language is the only tool that we can't put down. So we have to be very, very careful about the words that we use, about the metaphors that we use, the analogies that we use, because words and language can turn on us and not be helpful. And if someone, or if our culture, if your family or your culture has handed you a metaphor, it is our duty, I'm going to say it that way, to question these metaphors, to see if they still make sense, to see if we still believe them. Think about that word, believe. It actually means that we hope something is true, to believe it. Belief, we hope it's true. So that's why to really take a look and be aware and be mindful of these metaphors, and particularly to not be identified with them, to be attached to them, is what the great mindfulness tradition teaches. And the great tradition of poetry helps us, helps reinforce that. So, words that get in that get us in trouble say at the end of the day, as though whatever was said next was obviously true. I want you, next time somebody says at the end of the day or any of those kinds of expressions, know that what they're getting ready to say, they want you to believe is inevitable. They want you to believe is an absolute truth. And it sure as heck may not be. So at the end of the day, as though whatever was said next was obviously true, and it isn't, and it isn't. So then comes the essential display of light. This is like, the real insight. But because of the metaphor, the line says, yet again missed, the stars blotted it out by some rigid certainty, forcing us to think only in the proper linear ways, continuous strings of hissing words, now yielding their awfully mean harvest. So damn the approved answers, the preordained yeses and nos. So damn the rattlesnake words, those that would strike us dumb. As I've said so many times on this podcast, I think that our intellect, our strategic mind is so necessary in this world, but so is our heart. So is our emotional self. So is our emotional self. We need both. We need a kind of a holistic way of coming to the world, not just the logical and linear, but we need poetry to help us transcend the logical and the linear. It's like a miracle that a poem can do that, but it can use words that are logical and linear to transcend the logical and the linear. And so to help us be more aware of the words we use, poetry can help us do that. To, to trade out some of our metaphors for ones that actually reflect how we want to be in the world, what our intention is in the world, what we intend to pay attention to in the world. Okay, so that's a wrap. As I always say, thank you so much for your listening here. Make a comment, refer it to a friend. No matter whether it's YouTube or one of the podcast formats, I appreciate you being here. I really, really do. And as I also like to say, until next time and next poems, please